doors with combinations as long as pie. I couldn't have hoped for a better answer. She gave me a sour look.
Stupid fucking words.
Danny knew where 18 of the libraries were. There were 3 places in the Abbey she'd never been able to get near. The first spot she took me to, wards were etched in the stone floor at 10-foot intervals along the length of the hall, vanishing around a corner. I sauntered down the warded corridor, barely even flinching, while Danny hooted triumphantly behind me. I turned the corner, passed through another few wards, and came to a tall, ornately carved door. The door wasn't as easy to get through. It was loaded with wards and strange-looking runes. I tried the handle. It wasn't locked, but the moment I touched it, I suffered the horrifying sensation of falling from a great height, and instantly felt I was being watched, vulnerable, targeted in someone's crosshairs, an instant away from a bullet in the back of my head. I snatched my hand away, and the feelings vanished. I took a deep breath and tried the knob again. I immediately felt as if I'd been stuffed into a small, dark box underground, and had only moments before I suffocated. I snatched it back. I was breathing shallowly and shaking, but standing in the hall, perfectly fine. I peered at the runes on the door and suddenly realized what they were. Since I'd come to Dublin, I'd become a voracious reader of books on the paranormal, devouring articles on topics ranging from druids to vampires to witches, looking for facts in the fiction and answers in the myths. These were repelling runes. They worked by amplifying the innate fears of whoever tried to cross them. The third time I grasped the knob, my body was covered with fire ants, biting viciously, and I remembered how at 7 years old I thought the silky red dirt of the hill would be fun to play in. I'd been terrified of them ever since. It's not real. I braced myself and forced the knob to turn, while the ants shredded the flesh of my fingers away. The door opened and I stumbled through, choking down a scream, on the verge of clawing my skin off. All sensation stopped the instant I crossed the threshold. I looked back. The wood of the threshold was also engraved with repelling runes. I was through. I was in one of the forbidden libraries. I glanced around eagerly. It wasn't particularly impressive, not compared to BB&B. The room was small, windowless, and despite a number of dehumidifiers, musty. Between shelves and tables filled with books, scrolls, and collectibles, dozens of lamps blazed. Rowena was taking no chances with shades getting into her precious libraries. I moved into the room and began searching the tables first, while Danny stood watch far down the corridor. As I'd feared, there were no card catalogs in the forbidden libraries. Even though the room was small, a thorough search could take days. 10 minutes later, Danny yelled, and I hurried out into the hall, jerking as I crossed the spelled threshold, to find a mob of she-seers pushing and shoving at the ward line. Kat stood in the front of the mob.
"Rowena said you managed to pass through some of her wards and were in forbidden archives. She sent us to stop you."
Well, that answered one of my questions. I'd wondered, now that I could move through wards at will, if I still tripped them when I did. I was surprised Rowena hadn't come herself.
"To stop me, you'd have to be able to cross the ward line and..."
I glanced down at her toes, on the edge of the line of nearly invisible symbols.
"It doesn't look to me like you can."
"I can get past most,"
Barb said, shoving past her.
"You're not so hot. Joe can, too."
She turned around.
"Where'd Joe go?"
She looked at Danny.
"Wasn't she just here?"
Danny shrugged.
"She left."
"We're not after stopping you, Mac." Kat's usually solemn gray gaze danced with excitement. "We're after helping you search." I broke the ward lines with chewing gum. Yes, chewing gum. Wards are delicate things, easy to deface if you can touch them. In order to touch them, you have to be able to pass them, which usually makes touching them a moot point. But in this case, I needed to scrub the ward's power away to let my sisters in arms through.
In most cases, all that's required to undermine a ward is to break its continuity, to interrupt the design and short-circuit the flow of energy it generates. Sometimes, if you break one badly, you turn it into something else, but I didn't know that then, and my luck held that day. Although I could deface the wards on the door, I could do nothing about the repelling runes carved into it and into the wood of the threshold. Each she-seer that stepped across it had to face her personal demons. They all made it, I was proud to see. I left them in the library, dozens of sets of willing hands, carefully turning ancient pages, delicately unwinding thick scrolls, picking up statues and opening boxes and looking for anything we could use. Danny and I moved on to the next library. Gaining access wasn't as easy this time. Again, there were multiple ward barriers, but each was of increasing density and intensity. I passed through the first ward with relative ease, the second with a grunt. The third generated a small shock and made my hair crackle. I marked each one with a lipstick from my pocket as I passed through, so Danny could follow me. The fourth had me gritting my teeth, cursing whoever had placed these ancient designs. Rowena? I wanted to learn. I made the mistake of trying to barge through the fifth to get the discomfort over with quickly, and slammed into it like a brick wall. I bounced off and went sprawling. Danny snickered. I tossed my hair from my eyes and glared up at her.
"Dude, happens to me all the time."
I stood and warily approached the ward line. It wasn't a simple ward line. There were layers of wards, shimmering one on top of another. To date, the only wards I'd seen were silvery, delicate-looking things. These wards had a bluish tint, sharper lines, and more complex shapes. Now that I was paying careful attention, I could feel the slight chill they threw off. The pages in the Book of Kells had nothing on the intricacy of these designs. Knots became fantastical creatures, morphed into incomprehensible mathematical equations, and then back into knots again. I knew nothing of wards. Where was Barron's when I needed him? I spent 10 minutes trying to get through it. If I ran at it, it bounced me off. If I tried to press slowly forward, it simply didn't yield, as if there genuinely was a wall there that I just couldn't see.
"Try blood," Danny suggested.
I looked at her.
"Why?"
She shrugged.
"Sometimes, when Ro needs fierce, wicked mojo, she uses blood. Some of the wards we placed around your cell had my blood in 'em. I figure, since you can cross most of 'em, your blood might do something. If not, you can try mine."
"What do I do with it?"
"Dunno. Drip some on the wards."
After a moment's consideration, I decided it couldn't hurt. The day would come when I would discover I was wrong about that. Adding blood to some wards is even more stupid than throwing gas on a fire, and in some cases actually transmutes them into living guardians. Take it from me, never indiscriminately drip your blood on wards of unknown origin. I reached into my boot for my switchblade.
"Stay back in case something goes wrong," I told her.
I held out my hand, palm up, as close to the ward barrier as I could get without being repelled, and made a shallow slice. Ow. Blood welled. I turned my hand over to drip it on the floor. Nothing dripped. I turned my hand back over. There was no wound. I sliced my palm again, this time more deeply.
Ow.
Blood welled. I turned it over. Nothing dripped. I frowned, shook it, squeezed my hand into a fist.
"What you doing, Mac?"
"Hang on a sec."
I turned my hand back over. There was no cut. Setting my jaw, I turned my palm to the floor, kept it down, and sliced fast, hard, and deep. Blood dripped. Good for me. It stopped. I sliced again, deeper. It dripped again, and a thin rivulet ran into the edge of the symbols. The designs hissed, shivered on the stone floor, and steamed before eroding where my blood had touched them. I was able to step across the barrier, although not without difficulty.
"Come on, Danny!"
We weren't through the storm yet.
I could feel things up ahead. Worse things. There was no reply. I turned around. There was a stone wall behind me.
Danny?
I called.
Danny, can you hear me?
You are not permitted here. You are not one of us.
I whirled back around. A woman stood in the corridor, blocking my way. She was blonde, beautiful, with icy eyes.
Who are you?
I demanded.
Leave now or suffer our wrath.
I took a step forward and instantly felt excruciating pain. I staggered back.
I need to get into the library. I'm just looking for answers.
You are not permitted here. You are not one of us.
I heard you the first time. I just wanted to look around.
Leave now or suffer our wrath.
I tried reasoning with her, only to realize that, despite the crushing pain that slammed me every time I tried to take a step forward, the woman was nothing more than the mystical equivalent of a recorded message. No matter what I said, she repeated the same two things, over and over. No matter how many times I tried to push forward, pain drove me back. There was no doubt in my mind that these impenetrable wards protected invaluable secrets. I had to get through. I had other tools at my disposal. I opened my mouth and released Belaine's name. He was there before I'd even finished speaking, smiling for a split second. Then he doubled over in pain. His golden head snapped back. He actually hissed at me like an animal and vanished. I gaped. I looked back at the woman.
You are not permitted here. You are not one of us.
There was no way forward that I could see at the moment. I didn't have any unseelie flesh on me to try eating, to see if it would make me immune enough to the pain to continue on. Then again, after what I'd just seen happen to Belaine, I wasn't sure if having temporary fey running through my veins would help or hinder. I wasn't completely surprised to discover the stone wall behind me was an illusion. Still, forcing my way through it hurt like hell. Chapter 22.
The L.M. came to see me yesterday, I said as I stepped through the front door of Baron's Books and Baubles.
The exterior lights of the handsomely restored building were set to low, bathing the street and alcoved entrance in a soft amber glow. The interior lights were equally low. It appeared Barons no longer considered the shades much of a threat. I couldn't see him, but I knew he was here. I'm attuned to even the faintest whiff of Jericho Barons now. I wish I wasn't. It makes me remember a time when we danced, and he laughed, and I had no cares in the world but to be a fine beast. To eat, sleep, and have sex. Ah, the simple life. I tensed. There was an object of power, or several, somewhere in the bookstore. It was one kick-ass powerful one, or an assortment of lessers. I could feel it in my stomach. I could sense it, a cold fire in the dark pit of my brain. Oops no longer make me feel sick. They make me feel alive.
He said, "You're the jackass who taught him voice," I continued. Funny how you forgot to mention that when you were trying to teach me.
I forget nothing, Miss Lane. I omit.
And evade.
Lie, cheat, and steal.
He agreed. If the shoe fits.
You have absurd priorities.
He stepped from the shadows between bookcases. I looked him up and down. Once before I'd seen Jericho Barons wearing jeans and a t-shirt. It's like sheet-metalling a W16 Bugatti Veyron engine, all 1,001 horsepower of it, with the body of a 65 Shelby. The height of sophisticated power sporting in-your-face, fuck-you muscle. The effect is disturbing. He had more tattoos now than he'd had a few days ago. When I'd last seen him wearing nothing but a sheen of sweat, his arms were unmarked. They were now sleeved in intricate crimson and black designs from bicep to hand. A silver cuff gleamed on his wrist. There were silver chains on his boots.
Slummin', huh?
I said. You should talk, said those dark eyes, as they swept my black leather ensemble.
What's absurd about my priorities? I evaded. None of my concern what he thought of my outfit. You hated my rainbows. Now you don't like my leather. Is there anything you like on me?
The L.M., as you call him, sent his princes to rape you, and may possibly have raped you himself, and you only now mention that he... What? Came calling? Did he bring you flowers? And the answer is skin, Miss Lane.
I wasn't about to acknowledge his last words.
No flowers, just coffee. Wasn't Starbucks, though. I'd give my eye teeth for a grande latte from Starbucks.
I wouldn't so blithely offer up my eye teeth. You never know when you might need them. For a woman who was gang-raped recently, you certainly seem blasé.
Oh, please, Barons, how much more can I lose?
Never wonder that.
Why did you teach him? Do you realize that inadvertently, perhaps even vertently...
Not a word, Miss Lane.
You might have helped him kill my sister?
You're stretching.
Am I? What else did you teach him?
A few minor druid art.
In exchange for what?
What did Derox say? Did he promise you your sister back again?
Of course.
And did you tell your rapist you'd think about it?
He said he was coming back for me in 3 days, and that I'd better be willing.
But you...
Baron said softly, stepping closer.
Ah, my dear Miss Lane, you think you have nothing more to lose. When do these 3 days expire?
That's what really pisses me off. I don't know. He was annoyingly vague. Barons looked at me. Then a faint smile curved his lips, and for a moment I thought he might laugh.
The nerve. Threatening you and not being precise about it.
My sentiments, exactly.
The faint smile was gone. His face was cold.
You will not leave my side again.
I sighed. I was pretty sure you'd say that.
Do you want him to take you again?
No.
Then you won't be stupid. You won't go dashing off into danger at precisely the most inopportune moment for some seemingly noble cause, only to get abducted by the villain, through no fault of your own, because you had to do the honorable thing. After all, aren't some things worth dying for?
He said dryly.
I cocked my head. I didn't know you read romances.
I know humans.
Ha! You finally admit you aren't one.
I admit nothing. You want truths from me. See me when you look at me.
Why did you smash the birthday cake I got you into the ceiling?
You were trying to celebrate the day I was born. Come, Miss Lane, I have something to show you.
He turned and moved into the rear of the store without looking back to see if I was following. I followed. Major oops, dead ahead.
Who'd you have to kill to get the third one?
I stared. Three of the stones necessary to reveal the true nature of the Shisadu glowed an eerie bluish black on the desk in his study. He looked at me. Do you really want to know? His dark gaze mocked.
Scratch that question, I said hurriedly. Valaine has the fourth, right?
On that note, I wondered where Valaine had gone and why. What had happened to him in that warded corridor? Why had he hissed at me, and what had caused him pain? I'd expected him to sift in shortly after it had happened and either explain or be seriously ticked off at me.
I believe so.
But we don't know where.
Not at the moment.
Quit talking without talking. You have a mouth, use it.
I resented the implied intimacy of our wordless dialogues.
I was using my mouth a few days ago. So were you.
Quit reminding me, I growled.
I thought we were past unnecessary pretenses. I stand corrected.
I moved toward the desk, both drawn and repelled by the power the rune-covered stones were throwing off. I recognized the one I'd stolen from Malucha's lair. It was the smallest of the three. The second was twice its size, the third even larger. They had sharply hewn edges, as if they'd been chiseled with great force from some substance with vastly different chemical composites and universal laws than anything on our world. Arranged in close proximity to one another,
Each of the three emitted a delicate crystalline chiming sound of different duration and pitch. The sound was hauntingly beautiful and intensely disturbing, like wind chimes from hell. You said that if all four were brought together, they would sing a song of making. The song or a lesser one? Are there lesser songs?
I don't know.
I fidgeted. Barons admitting to ignorance disturbed me as much as the sound coming from the stones. I reached out to touch one of them. As my hand passed above it, its banked glow flared so bright it hurt my eyes. I drew my hand back.
Interesting,
Barons murmured.
Are you up for an experiment?
I looked at him sharply. You want to try to corner the book with three. To study it, see how it might react, and if anything further would be revealed.
You game?
I considered it a moment, remembering what had happened the last time he and I had gone chasing the book. The thing had abruptly changed course and headed straight for us. It had gotten Barons in its thrall. It had gone for Barons, not me. There was nothing wrong with me. I was fine. I was the same Mac I'd always been. Daddy himself had said that I was as good as they came. Everybody knew how wise Jack Lane was. Sure, I said. While he gathered the stones and began wrapping them in velvet cloths, I stared at the unseelie mirror. It had been standing right beneath my nose in his study for months, but I'd never once sensed its fey presence, and that it was part of a vast network of unseelie hallows. It was closed now, masquerading as a perfectly normal mirror. How does it work? I asked. He continued wrapping the stones in silence. Oh, come on, I said impatiently. It's not like I'm trying to pry into your head to uncover any of your precious secrets. The Fey are screwing up my planet, and I'm going to kick their asses off it. All knowledge, like weapons, good. So spill. He didn't look up from what he was doing, but I could see a faint smile playing at his lips. Sometimes I think you refuse to tell me things just to irritate me.
But you never do anything just to irritate me,
he said dryly. Not when it involves something that might be important. What if I get trapped somewhere with no escape but a silver? I wouldn't even know how to use it.
You think you've got the balls to step into one of those things?
You might be surprised, I said coolly.
Not if you do everything like you fuck.
I wasn't going to let him discombobulate me by bringing up sex. I want to learn, Barons. Teach me. If I knew a fraction of what you know, my odds of surviving would be way higher.
Perhaps you'd no longer want to.
Would you just cooperate? I said, exasperated.
I do not know that word,
he mocked in falsetto. I'm trying to arm myself so I can fight like I fuck, I snapped. But you refused to help. I hated it when he reminded me of when I'd been pariah.
I was beginning to wonder if you were ever going to say that word again, Miss Lane. Time was, you had no reservations.
Fuck me, Jericho Barons, you'd say, morning, noon, and night.
There are two kinds of verbal honey a southern woman can slather on her words when she feels like it. The kind that attracts flies, melts men's hearts, and firms up all their other parts, or the kind that makes a man want to curl up and die. I employed the latter. I didn't know getting you to talk was so easy, or I'd have said it 5 minutes ago. Fuck you, Jericho Barons. He raised his head and laughed, teeth flashing white in his face. I dug my nails into my palms.
The Silvers,
he said when he'd stopped laughing.
Once numbered in the tens of thousands, but some say they're now infinite. Fey things tend to...
I know, take on a life of their own. Change, evolve in strange ways.
When the Seelie King first made them.
Unseelie King, I corrected.
He was Seelie first. And quit interrupting me if you want me to keep talking. When the Seelie King first made them, they formed a network of absolute precision and predictability. It was a brilliant invention. They were the phased first method of travel between dimensions. Entering one of them instantly deposited you in the Hall of All Days.
What's the Hall of All Days?
The Hall is... Well, think of it as an airport, the main arrival and departure point of the entire network. It's lined with mirrors that connect to mirrors on other worlds in countless other dimensions and times. One can stand in the Hall, examine the individual glasses, and choose from hundreds of thousands of places to go. It was the Fae version of a quantum travel agency.
Belaine told me the king originally created the Silvers for his concubine, not for other Fae at all. He said the king created them so she could live inside the mirrors, never aging, and have other worlds to explore until he found a way to make her Fae like him. I wondered again what had happened to Belaine earlier this afternoon. Even though I knew I couldn't count on it, I felt a little naked without his name on my tongue.
Did he also tell you that when the queen felt the power of the king's creation spring into existence, she demanded to know what he'd done? And that to allay her suspicions because she hated his concubine so much, he had to pretend he'd made the Silvers as a gift for her?
Belaine said the king gave the queen only part of them.
Unfortunately, he had to give the queen the nexus that contained the Hall of All Days. His concubine got only a small portion of what he'd made for her, sealed off from the rest. To compensate, he built his concubine the fantastical white mansion high on a hill, a house of infinite rooms, terraces, and gardens. He made that part of the Silvers accessible only through mirrors that hung in his own private chambers.
So there are two separate parts to the Silvers. This was a lot to absorb. One is a collection of possibly infinite mirrors that connect to other dimensions, worlds, and times, from the main airport in the Hall of All Days. The other is a sealed-off smaller network that's where the concubine lived. I guess once she died, that part was never used again, I mused. The Silvers were fascinating stuff. I couldn't imagine being able to step inside a mirror and instantly be transported to some other world or time.
Belaine told you a lot.
Baron sounded irritated. He tells me more than you do. Makes me wonder who to trust.
Motto to live by, never trust a fairy. Did he tell you how the king's concubine died?
He said she hated what the king had become so much that she left him the only way she could, by ending her own life.
Did he bother pointing out that everything the king had done, he'd done for her? Did she think of that before she decided to kill herself? Did it ever occur to her that sometimes a willingness to turn dark for someone else might just be a fucking virtue?
It doesn't sound like he went dark for her. It sounds like he was ticked off that she was going to die and willing to do anything to keep her.
Perspective, Miss Lane, get some.
The Lord Master had said the same thing. You think the concubine should have appreciated that her lover turned into an obsessed jackass and overlooked the horrific results of his experiments? Maybe if instead of spending all his time, wasn't it tens of thousands of years she waited, trying to make her live forever, he'd just loved her for the mortal lifetime she had. She'd have been happy. Barons looked at me sharply.
The Silvers are a mess now.
He continued abruptly.
There's nothing predictable about them.
Because Kruse cursed them. Who exactly is Kruse? I kept hearing his name, but that was all. I didn't even know whether he was Seely or Unseely. And what was the curse?
Irrelevant, he's dead.
Barons placed the stones in a black leather pouch, covered with delicately glistening runes, and tied it with a leather drawstring. The moment he sealed the bag, the chiming ceased, and the stones fell silent.
But his curse will never die. It corrupted the Silvers irrevocably. What was once an easily navigated network is now a place of complete chaos. Now some Silvers take you to the Hall, but others don't. Worlds and dimensions fractured, and are splintered with IFPs. Some of the main mirrors shattered, others sprang into existence where they were never supposed to be. Many of the two-way Silvers in the Hall are now one-way tickets to wastelands. The looking glasses themselves changed, casting illusory reflections. The Hall of All Days collided with the concubine's realm. with parts of Faerie, and some of it even crashed into the Dreaming.
The Dreaming? I exclaimed. There's actually a Fey realm with that name?
It doesn't belong to the Fey. The Dreaming is far older and belongs to no one. It's where all hopes, fantasies, illusions, and nightmares of sentient beings come to be, or go to rest, whichever you prefer to believe. Complicating things further, Cruce's curse caused tears in the walls of the Unseelie prison, and now the Silvers connect to the prison as well.
Well, then why haven't the Unseelie escaped before?
Some have. But the Unseelie prison is so enormous that few discovered the rifts in the walls. And the Silvers are so impossible to navigate that only a handful ever managed to find their way into your world. One could stay lost inside the network of the Silvers forever. They're no longer a realm of the present, but hold the residue of the past. Some say they are also projections of all the possibles, that they really have become the hall of all days that have ever been and ever will be. There are no assurances. The Fae avoid them completely.
But not you, and not the LM.
There are ways. Druid arts that can seal off portions of the Silvers if used wisely, affording a degree of control over temporary transport within a limited space. Depending on the Silver you have to work with, it is not without discomfort. The cold in some of them is difficult to bear.
I knew that. I'd seen him step from it, coated with crystals of iced blood. I'd felt the gust of icy, soul-numbing air. And you killed the woman you carried out of the Silver, why? My voice was spun sugar on a knife's edge.
Because I wanted to.
He matched my sugary lightness of tone.
Didn't expect that, did you, Miss Lane? Not only an answer, but an incrimination in your book. Come,
he said, and his dark gaze glittered with sudden impatience.
The night won't last forever.
What's the Unseelie prison like? I wanted to know if it was the cold place I sometimes went to in my dreams. If so, how could I possibly know of it?
Multiply the chill in my silver by infinity.
But what does it look like?
No sun, no grass, no life, just cliffs and cliffs of ice. Cold, darkness, despair. The air reeks of it. There are three colors there, white, black, and blue. The fabric of the place lacks the necessary chemical compositions for any other colors to exist. Your skin would be as white as bleached bones, your eyes dull black, your lips blue. Nothing grows. There is only hunger without sustenance, lust without satisfaction, pain without end. There are monsters there that have no desire to leave because they are such monsters.
How do you know all this? I asked as we headed out back to, I assumed, select an incredible car from Barron's incredible collection.
Enough. Tell me, Miss Lane, if you could go back to the day Alina was leaving for Trinity and stop her, would you?
Absolutely, I said without hesitation.
Knowing that this would all play out anyway. The book was already loose. This was going to happen whether or not she came to Dublin. Just a different variation on the same destructive theme. Would you have kept her in Ashford to keep her alive, never learned what you are, and most likely died in complete ignorance at the hands of some Fae?
Isn't there a third option? I said irritably. What's behind door number three? Haven't you ever seen Let's Make a Deal? He gave me a look. Obviously not. What are we driving tonight? I asked as I reached for the doorknob. Chapter 23. I am not writing that. There were times when I had to put my foot down with Barron's. This was one of them.
Shut up and get on.
If I'd shaken my head any more violently, my neck would have snapped.
On. Now.
In your dreams. Our ride was a royal hunter. Barron's had somehow gotten a hunter to land in the alley between BB&B and the garage. One of those terrifying beasts whose primary purpose was to eradicate my kind from the face of the earth. Admittedly, it was one of the smaller ones, the size of a narrow two-story house, rather than a five-story apartment complex, and it wasn't throwing off that massively deadly feel of the ones Jane had shot at. But still, it was a royal hunter. The caste, responsible for murdering countless she-seers for thousands of years. And he expected me to touch it? I hadn't sensed it because it was somehow dampened. It crouched there, blacker than pitch, looking all satanic, with leathery wings and fiery eyes, horns and a forked tail. Its labored exhalations puffed gusts of smoke down the alley into what used to be the biggest dark zone in the city. The space between the bookstore and the garage was 20 degrees colder than the rest of the night. I reached inside my coat for my spear.
"Don't you dare,"
said Barons.
"It's under my control."
We stared at each other.
"What did you have to offer a hunter to get it to do this? How does one mercenary pay another?"
"You should know. How are your precious principles lately?"
I scowled at him. After a moment, I released my spear.
"It can cover the city far more quickly than we can in a car. Your IFPs, as you call them, don't bother it, making it the wisest choice of transport."
"I'm a she-seer, Barons. It's a hunter. Guess what hunters hunt? She-seers. And I am not getting on it."
"Time is short, Miss Lane. Move your ass."
I poked mentally at the hunter to glean its intentions, expecting to encounter a roiling pit of homicidal she-seer thoughts. But there was nothing but a wall of black ice.
"I can't get to its mind."
I didn't like that one bit.
"And tonight, it can't get to yours, so leave it alone and do as I say."
I narrowed my eyes.
"You can't control a hunter. Nobody can."
His dark gaze mocked.
"You're afraid."
"I am not,"
I snapped. Of course I was. The thing might be suspiciously dampened and seemingly oblivious to my presence, but fear of it was in my blood. I'd been born with a deep-seated subconscious alarm.
"What if it shakes us off as soon as it gets us up there?"
I might not bleed like I used to, but I was pretty sure my bones were as easily broken as the next person's. Barons walked around to the front of the hunter. Flames leapt in its eyes when it saw him. It sniffed at Barons, and some of the heat seemed to die. When Barons withdrew the pouch containing the stones from his coat, the hunter pressed its nostrils to it and seemed to like the scent.
"It knows it would be dead before it could,"
he said softly.
"It's never going to let me on it with my spear, and I'm not giving it up," I prevaricated.
"Your spear is the least of its concerns."
"Just how am I supposed to hold on?" I demanded.
"They have loose skin between the wings. Grab it like a horse's mane, but put these on first."
He tossed a pair of gloves at me.
"And keep them on."
They were of strange fabric, thick yet supple.
"You don't want to touch it with bare skin."
He assessed me.
"The rest of you should be fine."
"Why don't I want to touch it with bare skin?" I asked warily.
"On, Miss Lane, now, or I'll strap you onto the damn thing."
It took me a few tries, but a few minutes later I was on the back of an unseelie hunter. I understood why he'd given me the gloves. It radiated such intense cold that if I'd touched it with my bare hands, and there'd been any moisture on them at all, they would have frozen to its leathery hide. I shivered, grateful for my layers of leather clothing. Barons mounted behind me, too close and electric for my comfort.
"Why does it like the smell of the stones?"
"They were chiseled from the walls of the Unseelie King's fortress. It's the equivalent of your pecan pie, fried chicken and fingernail polish,"
he said dryly.
"Smells like home."
The hunter gave a blast of smoky air, filling the alley with the acrid stench of brimstone. Then it unfurled its wings, and with one massive pump of those leathery sails, lifted off and flapped darkly into the night, showering crystals of black ice onto the streets below. I caught my breath and stared down, watching as the bookstore grew smaller. We rose higher and higher into the cold, dark night sky. There was Trinity College and Temple Bar. There was the Garda Station and the park. There was the Guinness storehouse, with the platform where I'd stood looking down, the night I realized I'd fallen in love with this city. There were the docks, the bay, stretching to the ocean's horizon. There was the hated church where my world had fallen apart. I tipped my head back and looked up at the stars, rejecting both vision and memory. The moon was brilliantly white, brighter than it should have been, rimmed with that same strange bloody aura I'd seen a few nights ago. "What's with the moon?" I asked Barons.
"The Fey world is bleeding into yours. Look at those streets north of the river."
I looked away from the crimson-edged moon to where he was pointing. Wet cobblestones glistened a delicate lavender hue of neon intensity, traced by silvery cobwebs of light. It was beautiful. But it was wrong, and deeply disturbing, as if there was more than mere color to those stones. As if some microscopic, lichen-like, unseelly life form was growing on our world, staining it, transforming it as surely as Cruce's curse had mutated the silvers. "We have to stop things from changing," I said urgently. At what point would the changes become permanent? Were they already?
"Which is why one would think you wouldn't waste time arguing when I procure the most efficient mode of travel."
Baron sounded downright pissy. I glanced down at my mode of travel, at the inky, leathery skin fisted in my gloved hands. I was riding an unseelie hunter. Had any she-seer in the history of humankind ever done such a thing? Danny was never going to believe it. I watched wisps of fog pass its satyr-like head, crowned with lethally pointed ebony horns. I felt the play of tension in its hide as it flapped its massive wings. I studied the city beyond them. It was a long way down. "You do know Inspector Jane shoots at these things," I said, worried.
"Jane is otherwise occupied at the moment."
"You can't know everything." Now I was the one who sounded pissy. He gave the hunter's hide a little pat, like one might give a horse. It reared into an attack pose, craned its neck around, shot a flaming look of banked hatred over its shoulder, and snorted a thin tendril of fire from one nostril in unmistakable rebuke. Barons laughed. I have to admit, aside from the cold and Barons being much too close, I enjoyed the ride. It was an experience I would never forget. It's funny how, when things seem the darkest, moments of beauty present themselves in the most unexpected places. Dublin was still without power, but it had been so for months, and wind and time had carried all smog and pollution out to sea. No smokestacks puffed, no cars emitted fumes. There was no halo of city lights competing with the brilliant moonlight. The city had been swept clean. It was the world the way it used to be, hundreds of years ago. The stars twinkled as sparklingly visible in the Dublin night sky as they did in rural Georgia. The River Liffey split the city down the middle, its many bridges dissecting the long silvery path all the way to the bay. To the north, Jane's men were otherwise occupied indeed, battling a horde of unseelie I'd never seen before, just a few blocks from the alley where my sister had died. Grief welled, but I slammed it down so hard and fast into my padlocked box that I barely felt it. On the south side, we passed silently above my sister she-seers over and over. McHalo's blazing, led by Cat and Danny, they scouted the streets, doing what damage they could. Danny had hated my going off without her tonight, and had argued fervently that her super strengths might well be necessary in a pinch. She'd been far more piqued than mollified by my reminder that Barons was faster than she was. We flew for hours, circling, circling. It was nearly 4 in the morning by the time I finally sensed the Shisadu. The second I did, there went my head, a killer pounding at my temples, spreading to encompass my skull in an ever-tightening vice. "Got it," I said tightly, pointing in the general direction. The hunter took us down. We skimmed rooftops as I tried to target its precise location. Tops of church spires and smokestacks passed a dozen feet beneath us. The lower we got, the more intense my pain grew and the colder I felt. Teeth chattering, Shivering with misery, I guided him. Left. No, right. No. Turn here. Yes, there. Hurry, it's getting away. Wait. I can't feel it. There it is again. Abruptly, the Shisadu stopped. We overshot it by 5 city blocks and had to circle back around. Hunters don't corner like Porsches.
What's it doing?
Barons demanded. Besides killing me? Don't know. Didn't really care at the moment. Are you sure we need to do this?
It's merely pain, Miss Lane, and of finite duration.
You try functioning with your head split open and someone stirring your brains. Isn't there some druid spell you could do that would help?
I lack both tattoo implements and the time. Besides, I'm not certain it would work. And although you recently demanded I dress you in crimson and black, I have no desire to see you wearing it permanently.
And the reminders just keep coming, I muttered, and rolled my eyes. The motion, coupled with my nausea, nearly made me throw up.
Only because you seem to keep forgetting who saved your ass.
Unfortunately, not the many things he'd done to it. The hunter drew in its wings and dropped to the ground in silence. I slid off its leathery back and hit the pavement, puking.
Where is it?
Barons was demanding before I'd even finished. I wiped my mouth with the back of my hand. Dead ahead. 3 blocks, I guessed.
Can you walk?
I nodded and gagged from the movement, but didn't throw up again. I hadn't eaten since lunch, so there was nothing left to throw up. I took perverse comfort in the pain. Obviously, I wasn't the one who was going to doom the world. If I was so bad, the book would have liked me, wanted me to come closer, not repelled me. Riordan was wrong. The Shisadu didn't want anything to do with me. We closed in, Baron stalking, me stumbling. Behind us, the hunter lifted off, vanishing in a sudden snowstorm of black ice. "And there went our ride," I said sourly. As awful as the Shisadu inevitably left me feeling, there was no way I'd be able to make the long trek back to the bookstore. I hoped the stones would succeed in corralling it, even without the fourth, and maybe diminish the pain it was causing me.
It'll be back when the book is gone. It insisted on maintaining a certain distance.
I didn't blame it one bit. I just wished I could do the same. 2 blocks away, with the book firmly fixed on my radar, my pain vanished abruptly, for no apparent reason. The Shisadu was still dead ahead. I stood up straight for the first time since we'd landed, and took a deep, grateful breath. Baron stopped walking.
What is it?
I don't hurt anymore. I turned to face him in the middle of the deserted street.
Why not?
Got me.
Postulate.
I gave him a look that said, postulate this.
I don't like it.
He growled. I didn't either, but at the same time I did. I hate pain. I've always known I would make a terrible torture victim. If someone pulled one of my fingernails off, I'd spew the beans like a geyser.
But you still sense it.
I nodded.
Did you eat on Sealy?
He accused. Duh, oop detector here can't track if I eat it.
Yet you feel no pain at all.
Not an ounce. In fact, I felt great. Energized, charged, ready for anything. So? I prompted. Are we going to stand here all night or do something? Free from agony, I was ready to tackle it head on. He assessed me, his expression tight. After a moment, he said,
We abort. We're pulling out.
He turned and began walking away. Are you kidding me? I snapped at his back. We're here. We found it. Let's see what those stones can do.
No. Move it. Now.
Barons, I'm fine.
And you shouldn't be.
He stopped and turned to glare at me. Maybe I've gotten stronger. I'm immune to a lot of fey glamour now, and I can walk through wards. Maybe it just caught me off guard and my body adjusted after a few minutes.
And maybe it's playing with us.
Maybe this is a prime opportunity to learn something about it.
Maybe it's got you in its thrall and you don't even know it.
Maybe we could stand here all night debating the maybes, or we could put your plan into action and see what happens. You're the one who thought it up to begin with. Don't wuss out on me now. I turned my back and began marching in the opposite direction, toward the Shisadu.
Stop this instant, Miss Lane!
What happened to fear nothing, take no prisoners, barons? Should we go cower somewhere? I flung over my shoulder. A moment later, we were shoulder to shoulder, marching for it together.
You're impossible,
he growled. Pot meet kettle, I said sweetly.
Take this.
He handed me one of the stones, wrapped in velvet. Even inside the thick black covering, it glowed blue-black as soon as I touched it. He looked at me, hard, his gaze unfathomable. What am I supposed to do with it?
We're coming up on O'Connell. I'll circle around to the opposite side of the intersection and close in behind it. I want to triangulate it precisely with the stones. The moment you have both the book and me in your sight, place your stone on the east corner of the intersection. I'll position the other two where they need to be.
What do you expect to happen?
Best case scenario, we contain it. Worst case, we run like hell.
Chapter 24. I headed down the street after Barron's left, certain we were on the right track. It occurred to me that maybe the stones we were carrying were the reason I was no longer feeling any pain. Maybe as we'd gotten closer, they had erected some kind of protective barrier. They'd been created to harness and contain the book. Why wouldn't they shield whoever was carrying them from its harmful effects? I hurried to the intersection and stood on my appointed corner, waiting. And waiting. The book was moving very slowly, as if out for a leisurely stroll. Come on, move, damn you! Was a fae or a human carrying it? The city hummed with fae static, making it impossible to get a lock on any channel. As if it heard me, the book began moving more quickly, heading right where we wanted it. Then suddenly, it was just gone. What the? I spun in a circle, my radar on high, searching, testing the night. I couldn't pick up a thing, not even a faint tingle. I glanced back down the street. Barron's was nowhere to be seen. I didn't like this one bit. We shouldn't have split up. That was always when bad things happened in the movies, and that was exactly what I felt like at the moment. The ingenue, standing on the horror set. No lights, alone in a city of monsters, with an ancient, sentient receptacle of pure evil somewhere in my immediate vicinity, but no longer detectable by me, and with no clue what to do next. I turned in a circle, stone in one hand, spear in the other. Barron's! I hissed urgently. There was no reply. Just as suddenly as it had disappeared, the book was back on my radar. But it was behind me now. I called for Barron's again. When there was still no answer, I tucked my spear under my arm, whipped out my cell phone, and punched up his number. When he answered, I told him it had moved and where.
Wait for me. I'll be right there.
But it's moving. We're going to lose it. Head east. I thumbed end and took off after the book. I was rushing toward it, trying to catch up, when the book suddenly stopped, and I could feel that I was closer to it than I'd initially thought. Way closer. All my readings on the thing were wonky tonight. I froze. It was just around the corner, maybe 20 feet away from me. If I walked to the edge of the building and poked my head around it, I would see it. I could feel it there, perfectly still, pulsing with dark energy. What was it doing? Was this its idea of cat and mouse? Was it amused? It began moving again, toward me. Where the hell was Barron's? It stopped. Was it trying to spook me? If so, it was working. What if Riordan was wrong? What if the beast did have substance and could shred me? What if whatever was carrying it had a gun and could blow my head off? I was afraid if I retreated, the book might take it as a sign of weakness, in the way a lion can smell fear and come after me for all it was worth. I put on my best bluster and took a step forward. It moved, too. I flinched. It was all the way to the corner now. What was carrying it? What was it doing? What was it planning? Not knowing was killing me. I was a she-seer. I was an oop detector. This was what I was made for. I set my jaw, squared my shoulders, marched to the corner, and came face to face with a pure psychopath. He smiled at me, and I really wished he hadn't, because his teeth were chainsaw blades that whirred endlessly behind thin lips. He gnashed them at me and laughed. His eyes were black on black, bottomless pools. Tall and emaciated, he smelled of dead things, of coffins with rotting lining, of blood and insane asylums. His hands were white and fluttered like dying moths. His palms had mouths, whirring with silvery blades. Beneath one arm was tucked an utterly innocuous-looking hardcover. But it wasn't the Shisadu that held me riveted. I stared at the psychopath's face. It had once been Derek O'Banion. I had the spear, and O'Banion had been eating unseelie, so stabbing him would maybe kill him. But if I killed him, what would the Shisadu turn its full attention to next? Me. Abruptly, he stopped laughing and yanked the book out from beneath his arm. He held it with both hands at the farthest possible distance from his body, and for a moment I thought he was offering it to me. We were so close that, if I'd wanted to, I could have reached out and taken it. I wouldn't have reached out and taken it for anything in the world. Then he jerked and spun the volume around, as if the text, if there was anything inside that remotely resembled text, was upside down and unreadable. From his mouth came the whine of metal grating on metal, and he opened and closed his lips, as if trying to form words, but nothing came out. For an instant, I glimpsed whites around his pupils. Was that horror in his eyes? Had he just ground out, "Help!" with those metal teeth? I wanted to run. I couldn't stop looking. Then his eyes were pure black again, and his body was jerking convulsively, as if he was being ordered to perform and resisting every step of the way. His fingers closed on the edges of the book, and it was no longer an innocuous hardcover. Before my eyes it had morphed into the massive, ancient, deadly black tome with intricate locks, and they were all falling away, and the book was opening in O'Banion's hands, and I knew that whatever was left of Derek O'Banion inside the psychopath did not want the book to open. It wanted nothing more than to die without ever having glimpsed so much as a single page, not even one line. Yet he was being forced to open it. His fingers began to burn. Then his hands were ablaze and he was screaming. The flames licked up his arms, spread down his chest and legs, and engulfed his face. And suddenly Derek O'Banion flared white hot and erupted into ash that exploded 10 feet in every direction. I scrubbed frantically at myself, clawed ash from my hair, and spit it from my lips. An icy gust scattered all trace of what had been O'Banion. The Shisadu whomped to the pavement at my feet. Open. Chapter 25. Growing up, I knew my parameters. I was pretty enough that one of the class jocks would always ask me to prom, but I'd never score the quarterback. I was smart enough to squeak into college, but I'd never be a brain surgeon. I could lift my own aluminum-framed bike off the ceiling rack in the garage, but I couldn't budge my dad's bike that he'd had since law school. There's comfort in knowing your limits. It's a safety zone. Most people find theirs, get in it, and stay there for the rest of their lives. That's the kind of life I thought I was going to live. There's a fine line between being stupid and knowing you have to test your limits if you want to do any real living at all. It was a line I was poised on very delicately at the moment. The Shisadu lay open at my feet. I'd avoided looking at it since the moment it hit the pavement. "Don't look down, don't look down," was my mantra. Merely opening it had incinerated O'Banion. If I gazed into its naked pages, what would it do to me? I half-whispered, half-hissed Baron's name, then was struck by the absurdity of what I'd just done. Did I think if I didn't make much noise the book would notice me? Hello! It had noticed me. In fact, I was its sole focus. It had been playing with me since the moment I'd appeared on its radar tonight. Because I was me? Or did it play any person who stumbled near? "Barons!" I shouted.
Where the hell are you?
My only reply was an echo bouncing off brick buildings on the eerily silent street. I kept my gaze fixed, straight ahead, and tried to find the thing at my feet with that cheesier center of my mind. Got it. But it was inert. I wasn't getting any reading off it at all. Because of the stone in my hand? Because it was conning me in the same way it conned everyone? By masquerading as nothing of consequence at all? It was entirely too possible. There were too many unknowns. I was wrong. I wasn't poised between stupid and testing my limits. Miles of uncharted stupid stretched on both sides of the line on which I stood. I had to back away, a straight and narrow path down that line, taking great pains not to fall off on either side. I would wait for Barons, take no chances. I took a step back, then another, then a third, and my heel caught on something solid, and I stumbled and began to go down. It was base instinct to try to balance myself by reaching out with both hands and looking at the ground. Shit! I snapped and yanked my gaze back up. But it was too late. I'd seen the pages, and I couldn't not look again. I dropped to my knees and knelt before the Shisadu. I knelt before it because on its ever-changing pages I'd glimpsed the blonde, icy-eyed woman who had earlier stood sentinel, forbidding me entrance to one of the Haven's most important libraries. I'd seen her moving from one scene within the book to the next. I needed to know who she was and how to get past her. I needed to know everything the book knew about her. How did it know her?
You needed to know.
Barons would mock later.
Isn't that what your Eve told Adam when she plucked your apple?
It's not my apple, I would counter. You tried to pluck it, too. Aren't we all after the same thing, thinking we need something the book has in its pages? I have no idea what tempts you, but something does. Tell me, Barons, come clean. Exactly how long have you been hunting it, and why? He wouldn't answer, of course. Like I said, miles of stupid on both sides of that line. But kneeling in front of it right now, I was absolutely certain I was on the verge of an epiphany. That truly useful, liberating knowledge was minutes, no, mere seconds away. Knowledge that would give me control over my life, power over my enemies, that would shed light on the mysteries I was unable to solve. Show me how to lead, how to succeed, grant me whatever I wished for most. As I searched those two constantly changing pages, I was tormented by the drone of an insect at my ear. I swatted at it incessantly, but it refused to go away. I was busy. There were things here I needed to know, just beyond my comprehension. All I had to do was let go, quit worrying, learn, absorb, be, and everything would be all right. After a time, the buzz became a whine. The whine became a shout. The shout a bellow, until I realized it wasn't an insect at all, but a person roaring at me, telling me about myself, who I was, who I wasn't, what I wanted, what I didn't want.
Walk away!
The voice thundered.
Get up, Mac! Haul your ass out of there now, or I'll come kill you myself!
My head snapped back. I stared down the street. I narrowed my eyes, squinted. Barons came into focus. There was an expression of horror on his face, but it wasn't directed at the book open at my knees, and it wasn't directed at me. It was focused on whatever was behind me. Chills iced my spine. What made Jericho Barons feel horror? Whatever it was breathing down my neck. Now that I'd been jarred from the trance I was in, I could feel it, malevolent, mocking, beyond amused, laughing right behind my ear. What are you? I whispered without turning.
Infinite. Eternal.
I heard the sound of chainsaw blades, felt a gust of breath that smelled of oil, metal, and decay hot on my cheek.
Without parameters. Free.
Corrupt
An abomination that should never have been. Evil!
Sides of a coin, Mac.
It said in Riordan's voice.
I'll never flip.
Maybe something's wrong with you, Junior. It said, soft and sweet, in Alina's voice. Barons was trying to move toward me, hammering his fists on an invisible wall. I turned my head. O'Banion crouched behind me, his emaciated body pressed to mine, the scent of death surrounding us, those awful chainsaw blades an inch from my face. He gnashed his teeth at me and laughed.
Surprise! Gotcha, didn't I?
I didn't have to look back to know the book wasn't lying on the pavement. It never had been. I hadn't actually seen a thing. It had all been illusion, glamour, which meant the Shisadu had somehow skimmed my mind and plucked from it the images it believed would draw me in, keep me occupied. Some part of my brain must have been thinking about the woman, wondering how I would get past her tomorrow. It had shown me a glimpse of what I wanted to see, then kept me busy hunting for more, with elusive, sketchy images, all promise, no substance. While in reality it had been crouching behind me. Doing what? What had it been up to while I'd been staring into pages that weren't there?
Learning you, tasting you, knowing you, Mac.
O'Banion's bladed hand caressed my arm. I shook it off.
Sweet, so sweet.
O'Banion's breath was on my ear. I gathered